Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. August 21st, 2023. It is best to show an example. Question: if I see that a friend is suffering from not being annulled, how can we work with it, and where is the place of my correction? Answer: you have to give him an example of how to annul so that he sees what needs to be done and will do the same. Do not tell him about the problem, it is better to show an example. Maybe he will understand. From the Daily Kabbalah Lesson, August 4, 2023. Revealing the glory of his kingship. When the corrected becomes more precious than the new. Question: the Japanese art of kintsugi means golden joinery. It is the restoration of ceramic vessels using adhesive sap of the lacquer tree. Masters repair a broken jar and glue it together. Moreover, they do not just glue, but reveal cracks with gold paint, thereby showing the need for gluing. Is it important to be able to glue things together? Answer: in general, yes. If you know exactly their future purpose and evaluate them correctly, then gluing is a great correction. Question: in Kabbalah we study the process of shattering and the need for correction through connection. Now we live in a society in which people practically do not fix anything, they buy something, use it, and throw it away. How important is it to be able to fix things, fix relationships, and fix lives? Answer: I think it is necessary. Man is a creature that doubts all the time, makes mistakes, and is willing to perform more and more new actions. Therefore, he must understand that besides the fact that good impulses are destined for us, we must be aware of them, check them, and try to correct them. Question: why glue at all? After all, you can find something new, some new vessel, a new occupation, a new thing. Answer: no, there are things that are very dear to us, and we want them to be preserved. We want to deal with restored old things. Then the corrected thing becomes even more precious than something new or whole. We see the same thing in our history, in nature, and in technology. Many things in nature break, and we glue them together, connect them, and give them new meaning, a new life. They serve us, and we love them despite the fact that they could have disappeared long ago, having served their time. From CabTV's Kabbalah in the Modern Turbulent World, August 3, 2023. What can bring contentment to the Creator? Question: the feeling of the Creator's greatness is pleasure and joy. How do we accept this state correctly in order not to receive pleasure for our own sake, but to become a giver to bring contentment and delight to the Creator? Answer: we must be ready for this. We want to reveal the Creator only to bring Him contentment. When we reveal the Creator, it will add great strength to our work. Question: the Creator constantly gives us the opportunity to choose. How do we choose what will delight Him? Answer: what will delight your friends will delight him. Question: and if we proceed from the corporeal world? Answer: what can you give to the Creator from the corporeal world? Nothing. He has everything, all the necessary kelim and means to feel you in any state. From the Daily Kabbalah Lesson, August 3, 2023. Revealing the glory of his kingship. The balance between the material and the spiritual. Question: to the extent that we have a desire for the Creator and connection, material desires for this world are revealed in us. How do we work with them? Answer: perform them sequentially. You cannot give up this world, but you must establish a correlation between it and the spiritual world. Try to see where you have to make a correction at the beginning and then at the end. Question: should this balance be in intention or in action? Answer: in principle, we want our intentions to coincide with our actions. Question: if I want something material, Should I build the right intention or make a complete restriction on it? Answer, no. You have to make a plan for yourself for when you exercise a spiritual intention and when you fulfill a material one. From the Daily Kabbalah Lesson, August 2, 2023. Revealing the glory of His kingship. Don't waste your life on strangers. Question. Andre writes, Michael, you say we are egoists, such is our nature, and we need to rise above it. You say we need to annul ourselves, that is, in simple language, lower ourselves before others. My question is, if I know someone to be wrong, to be lying, should I still not object, keep quiet, lower myself, and keep listening? How do you imagine it? Please explain. P.S. Personally, I think it would not be manly. Answer, leave the manliness alone. Whether to stay quiet or not is all small egoism. Lower yourself or not, turn your nose up or vice versa, do as you like. Comment, it is more comfortable for him not to lower himself. My response, this is what he thinks. On the contrary, stop getting into clarifications of who is the greater egoist, you or the other. What for? Question. He had a postscript. Personally, I think it would not be manly. Does he have such pride? What should he do about it? Squash it? Answer, sure. Be wiser. Question. Do you call this wisdom? Answer, yes. If you snap at everyone like that, you will waste your life on strangers. Question. What should one do? What would be manly? Answer. If one does not take anyone into account at all, but lives with his own goal, his own life, and does not spar with others, but calmly, bypassing everyone, builds his life. Question. He asks. If someone is wrong, how can I lower myself before him? Answer. Leave him. Life will teach him. Question. You say to stay out of it. Should you insist on your truth? Answer. It is stupid. Question. Is this wrong? In principle, is this the cause of all problems? Answer. Yes, not to be argumentative, a bully, or boast with pride. All this will lead to nothing. Comment. Then let's take one step further. If one, for example, understands where it comes from in him, you call it egoism and so on, he understands everything perfectly. If he understands this, then, on the contrary, he is given with working with such a person. Answer. He is given work on himself, but not on others. Question. What should he do if he wants to work on himself? Answer. Calm down, about everything. It makes no sense to jump like a rooster and rattle yourself. Question. But if I want to work on myself, I calm down, what is my next move? I want to work on my ego. Answer. Figure out what you were created for. Precisely the way you are. Maybe so that, by calming yourself down, you will find a completely different path in life. Question. He writes, you say you need to annul yourself. How do I annul myself? Answer. This is already an entire science. In the name of what? For what? Before whom? If we are discussing this, then only before the Creator. If you want to be a good rooster, then you must imagine yourself standing before the Creator. Question. There is a man standing before me, and I imagine I am standing before the Creator? Answer. Yes. Then you will be able to lower yourself, calm yourself down, and try to get closer to the Creator in order to talk to him. Question. Is this how you have to behave all the time? Answer. All the time. We should strive to get into a dialogue with the Creator. From Cab TV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, July 20, 2023. How is the connection with the Creator formed? Question. Baha'u'llah writes that when the upper light hits the screen rejects the light, so to say, meaning, a person acquires a force that gives him the opportunity to reject the pleasures coming from the Creator. This action is called zibugdehaka, striking coupling. Where does the pleasure go when the light tries to pass into the vessel? Answer: the light that wants to fill me acts according to its intentions. And I act according to my capabilities, I push it away. Otherwise, it will enter me, and I will receive it for myself, which contradicts the entire program of creation. The upper light wants to enter me forcibly, it hits me, but I push it away, I don't want to accept it. This is where the striking mutual interaction occurs. I reject the light and the light rejects me. And here we must coordinate these actions among ourselves as a guest and a host. Meaning, the problem is how do I receive from the Creator what He wants to give despite the fact that I want to receive only for His sake. To do this, there is a coupling while striking called haka, from the word marker, blow. When the upper light comes to me from the Creator and presses me to accept and enjoy it, and I really want this pleasure but at the same time understand that I will be absolutely opposite to the Creator, then a state arises that I forcibly push the light away from me, and it goes away. After it recedes, I have the opportunity to attract it not for my own sake, not for the sake of feeling my own pleasure, but to receive this light for the sake of the Creator. After all, He asks me for this, and I do not receive it because I can receive it for my own sake. It turns out that the light came to me in order to fill me and delight me. I push it away and start taking certain doses of it just to please the Creator. So we form a very good connection, the Creator wants to fill me, and I want to fill the Creator. From Cab TV's Preface to the Wisdom of Kabbalah, July 30, 2023. New Life 251. The Influence of the Residential Environment on a Person, Part 1.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on our show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Nitza. Hello. And today, we'd like to develop a new field of talks that will take us to something new, but also old, and it's called community life. It's something that we don't exactly know what it means, but turns out that it's about the connections between us and the people around us. And we'll try to understand how can we take the relations between us and the people around us to a better place, so that each of us will feel a new life, a better life. How do we do it? What is community life? How can it improve my own personal life? This is what we're going to talk about today. Nitza, take it away. So what we'd like to talk about today is the effect of the living environment on a person. Looking back at my childhood, I can't separate my memories from the place where I was born, where I grew up, my neighbors, my neighborhood, the local park we played in, and all of that is actually a part of me. And I understand the tremendous impact it had on shaping who I am today. And we can say that every child, teenager, whoever it is, the living environment has a very strong effect over us. The first time when we leave our living environment is, here in Israel at least, is when we join the army. It's the first time that we leave our living environment, move to a different place where we meet other people. I remember that when we just got to the army, we always asked each other, where are you from? I'm from Jerusalem, I'm from Be'er Sheva, I'm from Tel Aviv. It's something that defines who we are. And so this is something that we'd like to talk about today. There's a famous saying by Chernyakhovsky who said, a person is the template of his native landscape. And this is something that's used a lot in schools. You can see it as a slogan and the entrance, etc., etc. And so this is what we'd like to ask about. We'd like to understand how meaningful is the influence of a person's living environment, his neighborhood, his neighbors. What effect does it have over us as children, as grown-ups? It is the good, natural influence that accompanied us all throughout history. That this is how we were born, this is how we grew up. In ancient times, back then, back there, where everything was common, where there was a commune, an extended clan, doesn't matter how you call it, a large group of fathers, mothers, grandparents, everyone lived together in some caves, in some places, in tents. And everything was common. And that was the closest environment to a person because he felt that it's all his, that he belongs to everyone and everyone belongs to him. And he didn't differentiate between these are his mom and dad and he's eating next to them or his friends. In general, everyone was close. Both relatives, blood relatives. That's the best environment. Then our ego, as it started to grow, and we started developing and multiplying, and especially developing in terms of our working tools, technology, etc. And then anyone could provide himself with his basic needs on his own, by himself. And so people start dividing, splitting up families. There was me and my neighbors and my grandparents, etc., etc. The differences began. Also differences because we became more distant from one another internally because of the growing ego. And also that's how we set our life. And also because of the household, that a person, even though that he's living by himself, with his wife, with his kids, he could provide himself. He could provide for himself, food mainly. And this is how we started moving away from each other. But still, it was a village. And my neighbors, they're my relatives. There are such villages where the entire village is one family. They all have one family name. They come from one origin, from the same grandparents, from generations back. That we can draw our lineage of where we're from. And still, there was mutual help and support, both because we were very close in terms of the work that we're doing, household chores, etc., etc., and each helped the others, and it was clear, and everyone was close. In terms of tastes and in terms of everything. When we further developed because of our ego and accordingly we moved further away from each other, then we all started to build our own farms and to keep our distance from others, each having their own small farm someplace, a field, flock of sheep, etc., etc., each in their own place. But still, we were connected with each other in a certain way, and this is how the children grew up accordingly. Meaning still, even though that they moved away from the previous form, but still, there was some kind of a general environment that we all knew that this is how everyone grows up, that everyone's similar. Accordingly, there were no marital problems, because I know who I'm taking. It's like my sister's, the same way I take the neighbor's daughter and get married. It was all clear. And that's how everything worked out. Until we started getting together in cities, gathering in cities, and to cities come people from different areas that are far from each other by nature, by occupation, by the way they run their household, etc. But still, like you say, and I remember it from my life, until about 50 or even less years ago, 30, 40 years ago. Each grew up in some kind of courtyard of his own, so to speak. That, you know, there was this place where we liked to gather, all the boys from the neighborhood, there the girls, maybe together, according to how old you are, according to the games that you play, etc. I mean, one way or another, there was this common atmosphere, and this was the spirit in which we grew up. And the parents were similar, even though there were already bigger differences in terms of wealth, in terms of maybe tastes too, that people started moving more, and then strangers came to our neighborhood, but still, we're kind of integrated, even though that barely. We see it that a person that comes from some distant mentality, for them it was hard to get along. People usually used to come to the city, that this hut was there. But those that lived in the suburbs, in the more pastoral places, they felt it. In the big city today, there's no such concept as a courtyard. The courtyard is the place where the child is raised, where he's educated, where he's together with kids that are similar to him. In Hebrew it's called chatzel, where they have values, common values of their own, games of their own, and from that they get their world view, and each passes on to the other what he thinks, what he saw. It's the first university for a child, the so-called chatzel, yard, or chatzel in Hebrew. And when we start going to school, it kind of blurred the concept of the courtyard of our community, but still not that much. We used to come there, and very quickly we used to go to school, run home, throw our backpacks, and go play in the yard with the friends. And this is how we lived. And it doesn't matter if you grew up in the city of Petah Tikva, and I grew in some village 3,000 kilometers from here. It was the same. That's how it was the world over, until we started building these big cities after World War II, especially. We have millions that gather in one place, no one knows the others, and we and the neighbors are so different, so much so that it's no longer customary to be connected, and even the kids barely leave the apartment unless it's for to go to some club. And downstairs they don't even have a place to play. I see that even where I live, there's this nice park next to where I live, and a playground for children, and a small lake with fish, etc. But still, I see only elderly people there, sitting on the benches, and tiny children that play on the swings, etc. Slides. But children of the ages of 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and on, you don't see them there. Maybe they're going to different clubs, which is something that's very common today. In my childhood, it was also common, but, you know, it was like half of the yard went to the same club. That it was like this special building in the city where you had different extracurricular activities, like photography, like sports, but still, one way or another, the courtyard is something that I remember to this day. I remember the names of these friends. Of course, I don't know where they are today. Do they exist still? But it was something that really had an effect on me, and I was very impressed by it. That's the nature of a child. What else does he absorb? Especially that there were no TVs or computers or electronic games. But if you kids' books and the rest were natural games that we played in life. And therefore, I think that a person grew up in a more convenient, comfortable, natural way. People didn't fall into despair like today. There was no divorce like today, of course, and all the negative things that a person actually experiences as a result of loneliness. And therefore, community and loneliness are two opposite things. And this is how we see that it's especially in our time. And this is a problem that started a few dozens of years ago, suppose from the 60s, 70s, where the world really started, became rapidly corrupted by the growing ego that started separating us, even us relatives, families, even fathers and sons, and people that belong to the same nation, the same street, same neighborhood, and we all become individualists, each doing his thing. And then I don't even feel who's my family, and there's no such closeness or concern for your family. We see today how much kids, either they don't want to leave home because they feel good under mom's wings, or they leave without any problem, no sentiments. And also the parents easily get divorced, find other families, and then a few years after, several years, get divorced again, meaning our ego is becoming or makes us such individuals that we start feeling negative phenomena from it, which is the lack of community, the lack of a courtyard, the lack of an environment, the lack of a family, the lack of some kind of feeling of a country. You see how entire nations disperse in different countries, and they don't mind wherever they feel good right now, this is where they land and continue living somehow. In the past, to move from country to country to live, it was something, it was a very special journey. I disconnect, detach from something. And today, it's not called to disconnect or detach yourself from anything because hamburgers and Coke you have everywhere, what I have here, I have there. Same clothes, same songs, same virtual connection. In short, the person doesn't feel that he belongs, that neither the place, nor the environment, nor the culture or education, it's all universal. And therefore, the concept of a community is completely destroyed because the community is that which works in a small place. From a short distance. And today we like overcome the distances. And I build my relation, my attitude toward you, and the measure to which it's convenient for me to be close to you. Suppose 2 meters, it's okay. Closer? No. Further away? I don't know, because maybe we need to do some common work or something. But actually, we have different communications, internet, virtual connection. And so what follows is that we broke the matter of distance. And by that, we broke the matter of community. And here, along with it, we see that all these things, they have a negative effect over us. We're also losing a person's responsibility for the world. In the past, I was responsible for my entire clan. When we lived in the caves, I knew that I have to protect them, they protect me, and we're all as one man. Comes some lion, some mammoth, we need to overcome it, all of us, together. You see that it's like monkeys or some other group of animals that attack someone or something. And that's how we were too. Later on came the matter of pacts. Here we had a natural pact. Later came pacts, that we sign a pact, treaty, that under such and such conditions we come and help each other, or we don't, etc., etc. Meaning, we already understand that we need mutual help. And this how the matter of these pacts became more complicated, with more complicated conditions, etc., etc., until we reached the state or the situation that we have today. Where today, no one feels responsible for anyone else, each for himself. It's clear to me that no one cares about me, and everyone understands that no one cares about anyone. But still, there's some kind of tiny closeness that remains, that maybe it is worthwhile for me to invest in them, because I'm a part of them, like in a nation. That if there's some kind of external enemy, and therefore we need to pay attention that all those enemies and haters, that if we're talking about Israel, for example, that are surrounding us, they help us somehow remain in some kind of community, in some kind of nation, because if we don't keep ourselves together, then they're helping us to nonetheless stay tied together somehow, because we're facing a general threat that's equal for everyone. On the other hand, we see that the world, along with it, is advancing toward a state where it is becoming a global and integral world, meaning that to the measure to which we become more distant from one another, we need to be in communication and connection with one another, because one way or another, that very same connection, the primitive, ancient one, remains and is only going and growing. Why? When we were in the caves, we were connected. Then we dispersed a bit. And when we were dispersed, we weren't that connected, but maybe we didn't need the connection that much. We had some kind of pact inside our village, etc., etc. But we didn't feel that we're dependent on each other in terms of trade, industry, supplies, and many other factors, like we are today. Today, we've reached a state that we weren't familiar with 100 years ago, that we're interdependent in everything, the banks, the financial system, the system of supplies. We see the world suddenly became, we didn't plan it, we didn't build it this way, but it suddenly locked, as if we built and built and built, and suddenly it closed and became like this loop. And all of us are together in one system. And this is how we're connected. And then we start, on the one hand, to feel ourselves uncomfortable, inconvenient, because were these my relatives, then okay, I could get along somehow. We're practically the same, we're very similar. But if these are distant people with different mentalities and different goals, then why get along with them altogether? What are we supposed to do with them? And we see that the world is becoming smaller, more closed, that all in all we see our planet as something small, where the population is interdependent, that if something happens in one place, it's felt in other places, etc., etc. So much so that we wanted to build ourselves more independent, that there I grow vegetables, in China I excavate special metals that don't exist in any other place in the world. In the U.S. I developed something, South America, and Europe, everywhere. There, dairy, here, meat in Argentina, there, it's vegetables, here, metals, there, cars. Meaning as if this inclination started in the last 100 years, this kind of specialization, this division, industry, etc., etc. At first it was inside the country. I remember still in my times, there were such factories that made everything from the tiny bolt to a big car. And there was a department where they built things out of wood, and here metal, and there rubber, until what you get is a car. So much so. I'm not sure why. And afterwards it was divided, they only gathered things in a specific, in one place, out of which came out a car that comes as something complete out of 100 different components that come from many different places, and today it's even from many different countries. Meaning this dependence, this specialization, the special direction, and created things brought us to very strong interdependence, even though that financially is beneficial. It was beneficial economically. Today it isn't anymore, because moving things from place to place nowadays is very expensive because of the oil and everything. But the mutual, the interdependence continues, it's growing, and we're becoming ever more interdependent. And this already becomes as a kind of response that stands in the way of our ego. If I could earn something, if I could gain something by it, then that's good. But if it compels me, then it's bad. If it obliges me, because I don't want to be that interdependent or that dependent, and therefore we have today a very big crisis of interdependence, like kind of wedding that we didn't want. And we came to some kind of mutual connection, dependence that's multifaceted, that there are many things dependent on it. Every country is dependent on other countries, and how are we going to cut this connection? Cut the ties, how? And so what follows is that the matter of community and even the courtyard, it's something that is above us, that's pressuring us, forcing us to get back to those values, connections, as it used to be. That the big city, with all this technology and the distance that we've discovered, that all of this is the revelation of the evil of our nature, that we've followed our nature, and now we've discovered that if we follow what we feel from the inside that comes to us from our ego, of pushing each other away, moving away from each other, until a certain degree it was natural and maybe worked for the better, but beyond that it became like the big blow that we're experiencing today. And that's the recognition of evil. That this, the blow that we're going through right now. Strong blows, multifaceted ones that won't come to an end until we acknowledge their evil, their reason, meaning our ego. That now, even though that all of us are interconnected, tied together against our own will, we need to be connected in a positive way, as if that we have a choice. And therefore, community life is the future of the world that entirely became a small village. So let it truly be a small village, and it's something that we won't be able to escape. The question is, how soon will we see it through our intellect as the wise who foresees the future, and that will head toward it as quickly as possible, and prevent further blows. And therefore, community life is something that's necessary for us. And actually, from here, we're coming to the question of how can we come closer to it? Because it's interesting that the world became a single culture with the same music, same games, and also a very similar cuisine. Wherever you go, you practically have the same things. And if I want some special food, that I come to some place, where do you have your special Bulgarian food? So you have to go to a special restaurant, because all other restaurants, they have the same chips, same fries, pasta, and the same, and burgers everywhere. I remember I came to Montreal and I asked, where can I find special French cuisine here? So he says, why don't you see? And he's showing me McDonald's. He's making fun, yeah, they don't like Americanization. He says, this is the French restaurant, you know, as a joke. Afterwards, I found. I asked that in a Jewish area, a big Jewish area. My son studied there in the yeshiva in Montreal for many years, so I used to come there from time to time. So what I wanted to say is that we've lost all of these things. That today we say that this is French cuisine and Bulgaria and English, it's very far from the authentic things that as they were. People just say that to tourists and everything. So what I want to say is that the world is advancing in a certain way towards something more general, but it comes from the ego because of trade, commerce, industry, different things, that it's convenient for us that everyone dresses the same, eats the same, wears the same shoes, etc., etc. It's good, convenient, and, you know, it's on a conveyor coming to everyone to fill a person with what he needs. But if we're talking about inner fulfillment, about man's inner fulfillment, then here we are in a very bad state. And we see it by the statistics of despair, that really people are lonely, closed in their room or apartment. They don't know how to come out to contact with other people. You know, tops, you have mobiles, TikTok, SMS messages, whatever. They sit in a coffee shop, drink beer or something, but it's all nonsense. Foolish nonsense that everyone needs to be like everyone else. It doesn't fill a person. It doesn't fill a person's yearning for that ancient courtyard, for that community, for the sense of community. And I had several opportunities to meet friends of mine. For example, suppose I was in St. Petersburg, where I finished the university and I started my doctorate there. And the same people that I was with together at the university and later on the academy, they still live there. And I didn't go. I don't know, what will I talk to them about? What do we have in common? What do we, don't we? And also, when I asked them later on by email, they're saying that the first time they met after 40 years or something, they met for the first time after 40 years or something, meaning we don't know how to connect with each other. And I admit, and I'm aware of it. And this may be something that people need to be retaught how to do. Because despite the big, global, interconnected, interdependent world, if we're interdependent, then it's preferably that we'll be interdependent in a good, positive way. Otherwise, we can cause each other problems and troubles. And even though that it might seem to me that I might succeed on my own, and keep my distance from everyone, and crudely put, disregard everyone, but then it comes right back at me. And this is something that you need to show a person and teach him, that you can't escape the connection, that the connection is tight and mutual, and it's good for you to learn how to do good to others, because the good that you do to others comes back to you. If we're all interconnected in an integral system, ties over ties, then necessarily the good that you cause comes back to you, and also the bad that you do. And don't think that it disappears or goes somewhere. According to researches, especially of the last 20 years, we see that it's very, very tightly all locked and interconnected, the entire human connection, meaning we are as if in one yard, in one global community, and as if, instead of the different nations, in that yard you have, suppose, 200 or 150, doesn't matter, completely different children, yellow, red, white, black, and you have rich and poor, and these and those. And everyone is in the same yard. Imagine, how do we come to such a group and start to organize them for them to be together? Is it possible? How to approach it? But this is actually the problem. And therefore, and I can imagine that this is a very big problem. And thank God it is as if not upon me to solve it, and maybe not even in my days, even though that I'd be nonetheless happy to see people discussing it, seriously wanting to arrange these things. In the meantime, I don't see such. But I think that at least we need to think about how can we take a city or a neighborhood. That today, in every neighborhood, you have the same model, the same template. Like it is in the entire world, you can take your neighborhood, for example. I know the neighborhood where I live, it's a very modern neighborhood. It's called the New Emma Moshavot in the city of Petach Tikva. No one knows the others. You don't know your neighbors. In the elevator, no one says hello. Each goes up, goes down, really 20-story buildings. I go to my apartment, lock it, a few locks on the door, of course, bars on my windows, of course, etc., etc. And that's it. Internet on the inside, TV on the inside, fridge full, thank God, and I feel safe from my neighbors. And downstairs, there's a room. It's called a guest room. No one does anything there. Sometimes someone throws a birthday party there, something for children, for little kids or something. I once saw them do it. And also not for the neighbors. It's for their relatives or something, in order not to bring them to their apartment, for them not to litter it. That's the thing. So I think that if we'll be able to do it in a small community, in an area in which nonetheless people are similar, then with this material, we can already move forward or write a doctorate about it, like you do in research with statistics. Could be interesting. You can hire some office that will do a survey about illnesses, about divorce, about different problems in the neighborhood. We'll do work for a year and bring people closer together and the children and open a few clubs for moms and boys and girls and maybe something else. And We'll check after a year. What did we achieve? What did we achieve in health, in divorce, in uplifted spirits, mood, connection between children, how much less they watch TV every day and are in front of the screen, talk to each other. I'm not even talking about them going to each other's houses. This is how it used to be when I was a child. Friends used to come to my yard, to my house. So at least in the yard, to maybe open some kind of club for children, for boys, for girls. And this is something very interesting. I mean, first of all, let's see the measure in which our children grow in that positively, meaning that there's less vulgarness and disregard. Maybe mutual help, uplifted spirits, people aren't closed, some kind of maybe restlessness, depression, boredom, different things that humanity, that the younger ages nowadays are experiencing in a very outstanding way. This is what I'd like to do, try out. And I think that from here on, we have an opening then to the entire country, to the broad world, because the problem isn't in that one cell of that area or a collection of such cells, which is a city or some parent union or something. But it's in the entire world. I'd like to make a short summary to what we talked about up until now, and then move on to a few further questions before the solution. So first of all, you're describing a very general situation where the distances between us disappeared. On the one hand, we're global and integral people. On the other hand, the lack of distance has created a much stronger interdependence between us. And because of it, and because we lost the distance, we don't know how to handle ourselves on the very basic day-to-day level with other people. Meaning, if in the past we could set the distances between us according to our own desire, where do I build my house, where do you build your house, to what extent are we connected, closer, further away. Today, we're tightly connected at work, cars, different things. I see how people are riding the bus or traveling in their cars, even though that each has his own car. One person per car. But how everything's tightly together, how much a person feels that the others are putting pressure on him. Not even to mention the metro, the subway in Tokyo or in other big cities where everything is so dense and people want to move away from each other and they need to face each other all the time. So close. I remember it on myself. And so here's the problem. In a state where we feel the interdependence between us, not a physical one, but an inner dependence, we now came to such an inner dependence where I'm dependent on the well-being of the entire world and every person in the world, because eventually it'll harm me in some way. Meaning, I become close to that person, not physically, but internally, mentally. That's also the problem. And it's a very difficult problem, that as if I can get out of it. I'm incapable of, let's say, moving away. It seems to me that I can move away, escape to some remote place, to the desert, deserted island, something. It only seems that way. Because internally, I'm so interconnected with the rest of humanity that whether I like it or not, I need the interconnection, the mobiles, internet, virtual connection, whatever it is. And furthermore, I feel that I'm connected to everyone, that it's impossible to cut off the connection in here. We really have a problem. You're depicting it, and I'm imagining the situation where, on the one hand, there are no more differences. On the other hand, once it happened, each of us has built more fences, walls. We're demanding our privacy, not wanting to let anyone into our personal zone. Because there are no more distances, we're practically obsessively protecting our personal zone. Yeah, that's what our ego wants. But in the meantime, that you've built walls all around you, there's a thread that nonetheless goes in, into the soul, into your internality, and ties you to the rest of humanity. What is that thread? It's a feeling that I'm connected, that I'm dependent on everyone, or not everyone, but on many people, and that I can't get rid of this connection. And a person doesn't know what to do with that. He still doesn't feel, where does it come from? He doesn't feel that he's so connected. You can say that, it doesn't matter, etc., etc., but it's there, it exists. It's only the time that's needed to come to the recognition of ego. Also, previously said that our way to establish connection with one another and to start reviving the ties and the good atmosphere that we used to have, and today we don't have them anymore in those skyscrapers of concrete that we live in, is through community life. Why? Because it's practical, it's close to a person. Along with being global and integral, in the morning I get up and go out of my house, meeting those people that are close to me. I meet people. So I want to ask something that's really close to me, because before a person makes a change and agrees to live a community life, he needs to first of all understand the crucial influence that his environment has on him, and maybe especially on his children. The first effect that I see is maybe the sense of security, which is closest to a person, because in our basis, we're animals. And therefore, first of all, a person needs security, then food, then sex, and then family. These are necessary things for our existence. That today, I start seeing that in all these things, I'm dependent on everyone and on unidentified factors. Security. How could I know where can trouble come from? Food. I don't know what's going to happen with the climate and all the problems and troubles of the economic system and everything. Sex. Also, what's going on in the last generation. It's... It awakens very unique thoughts that we'll talk about this some other time, but how it's all becoming distorted to some extent. And not that, God forbid, I'm blaming someone for something, but it's the general influence of the environment, food, pollution, etc., the mutations that we go through. And family. Well, obviously, this thing is something that you can say is practically disappearing. And along with all these things, they're breaking our framework, that without this framework, a person doesn't feel himself as a man. He's living in a certain state where he's putting himself on autopilot And he carries on and lives his life, and as long as he lives, he carries on. Meaning he doesn't have a sense of enlivenment, of vitality, of what for. Because if previously it was for your children, wife, assets, then grandchildren, that they all grew up next to him and he enjoyed them. He also enjoyed the food and sex and family and kids and grandchildren and everything. He doesn't enjoy. Doesn't enjoy. Psychologists and doctors say it, and we see it, how it's implemented in our day-to-day life. Now, I think that this is what will eventually force us to examine the reason of why is it going on, and to see that without this general wrapping that I need to get, inside of which that includes both the family, and kids, and sex, and food, and security, and everything, that all these things together are called my close circle or community. If I don't see it in others or in myself, I have no place to take an example from other families, other kids, from how they live, etc., etc., then I'm also like a piece of board at sea without any direction. I need to get examples, not from TV, from all those TV serials, and I need to get an example from others, from those around me. Because this is what a person's nourished by and how he builds himself. So the problem of the community, of the courtyard, in our time especially, it is a very conspicuous problem that we really feel that we're helpless, that we've lost direction. And this starting with a childhood where we lost our yard, and in the upcoming years that we have no community, meaning the need for it is truly great. And therefore I think that easily it's possible to awaken a need for it and to show the gain from it in all of these things in terms of mood and kids' success at school and decline in crime and the general care for the area that they live in everything. It's possible. It's possible to make this thing as an example, but you don't need to start with an area like mine, which is an area where you have people of a certain type that are very aloof from one another, don't want to get to know each other. They're still in their pride and in a kind of hidden competition against each other, how much cars does a family have, etc., etc. And we need to see how do we address those people that for them community life is something that is a demand from within, that they as if ask about it, that they have a desire for it. Desire, need, lack for mutual help, for building a better general state. That it needs to be a population that is not that much in competition, but that's closer to connection. There's something very interesting. When we look at a person, regardless of where did he come from, when you talk about his kids, suddenly he's willing to listen. I mean that eventually, whether we like it or not, where we live, where we play, where we are, it's something that really, that has a very strong effect on our children. Our child is affected by A, family life, direct family. B, his neighborhood. C, is the age group, the kids of the same age that he interacts with, and the fourth environment is school, meaning the neighborhood takes up a very important place. And in all the researches that were done, you can see that there is a very strong influence not only by the same age group, but also if adults act in a certain way. They fight, they argue, they collide. It has a very strong effect on our children. So what I want to say is that eventually, even if you live in a relatively good neighborhood, still, at the end of the day, my kid will be very much influenced by the environment that he lives in, even if I try not to see it. If I'm aware or not aware of it, doesn't matter. So first of all, I'd like for us to surface our awareness, because I feel that to some extent I'm aware, and maybe to some extent I'm not, because as we talk about it, I start understanding what an effect it has on my children, that there's no yard, that there's a different form of these things. It has a very strong effect on how our children grow up. And so, in the few minutes that we have left, I'd like to go back to our first question. In our current situation, how does the living environment affect my children? I think that it has a direct influence, and let's call it alternative effect. Indirect. That directly, in the measure to which my child is in direct contact with the other kids in the yard, in the area, according to his age, according to his, maybe there's several such groups there, doesn't matter. Still, and the area itself. It's already the general opinion of the parents and kids, and that doesn't even matter. It's that piece of land that has an effect on you. It affects everyone. What do you mean, the area, the general opinion in the area that we live? There are such areas in the world where the influence of the environment is, you have the still, the vegetative, the animate, and the speaking. So the still, that stays, the ground, the vegetative and the animate, we push out, and comes the speaking man. So the still level and the speaking level are in the same area, in a certain neighborhood. Yeah, a person comes and settles down on some piece of land, and we know that people, they come to some specific piece of land, like in South America. People in South America, let's take Indians for example, then they have a special character. I'm familiar with them, I met them many times in many places. I met real Indians once that came down from the Andes, that came down to come to get to know me. We have even videos and everything. And it was very interesting to see them, real natives. They even talk, aside of Spanish, they speak their ancient language. So when I move to a certain neighborhood, what happens then? What I'm asking is, why do they have a specific character that's different from Russians, Chinese, and Africans? Because of the culture. Yeah, but why is the culture different? We're all human beings. It's because the place determines. The place has an effect. We also learn it from different kinds of wisdom, that in every place in the world, there's a different force that influences. You can say that it's magnetic forces, another force, doesn't matter. It has an effect. We're not just human beings, a piece of protein. We're influenced by different fields, magnetic, electromagnetic fields, etc., etc. So the combination between the geographic place, of course, you change your place, you change your look. So if I move to a certain neighborhood, then gradually you take on the same form as that city. Even if I don't exactly communicate with other people there, I don't know, how can you not communicate? I come to meet my relatives that moved to Canada a few dozens of years ago. We have a completely different spirit. Besides the fact that I'm engaged in something special, it has an effect on me. But their mentality changed. My son's mentality changed. So it's like projected through the air to anyone who enters that area. Yeah, that's how it is. But why is that important to you? Because if you live in a certain neighborhood, it has an effect on you for sure. Even if you're locked on all sides, it will still affect you. The air, that's how people say. The air of Israel. That's how people say. And they don't just say it, because we're a result of the still. The still, the land. Adam in Hebrew, man, comes from the word adama, soil, ground. We don't have enough research about it. We don't know it, but there's a very strong connection to the soil, the land. Our time's almost up. In a sentence, how would you summarize the way in which the environment that I live in affects me? It affects you 100%, and you can't resist this influence. And our world is unraveling towards a state where it is more and more needy of a good environment for everyone. Thank you very much, Dr. Leitman. Thank you, Nitza. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, wish you all the best.
Michael Leitman, on Quora. Why is God angry at me? There is no such thing as God getting angry at you. Some writings in the Torah could be misinterpreted that way because it speaks in the language of human beings, but the upper force has no anger. It is above human emotions. It is more accurate to think of God as a system that knows everything that is going to happen in advance. Negative phenomena that enter our lives, such as natural disasters and pandemics, are not out of any anger on God's behalf. Instead, they come in order to teach us how to better understand the system we exist in, and to organize ourselves in balance with that system, to become as integrally connected as the system. How can we know for sure that not balancing ourselves with nature as an integral system is the reason for the misfortunes that befall us? We see how nature is an interconnected and interdependent system, and the human being is the only part in this system that has free choice. Only we can push nature out of its balanced connection. How does this work? We humans were made with egoistic desires to enjoy ourselves at the expense of others and nature. Such an inclination is called evil or bad due to its opposition to the system's functioning. While starting out in this opposition to nature's connected form, we need to balance ourselves with nature by entering into positive, kind, uncaring relationships with each other. If we fail to motion toward changing ourselves from being negatively connected to each other, where we wish to benefit ourselves at each other's expense, to a positive connection where we wish to benefit and serve others, then we invite various errors and negative responses to accumulate in the system, and the system accordingly reacts. We fill the system with more and more deviations, and then it boomerangs back to us accordingly. Its response targets the negative connections that we inserted into it, and such a response is aimed precisely at correcting us. That is, at shifting us from negative to positive relations among each other. It is important to emphasize that this single system of nature, God or the upper force, all of which are one and the same, that is, a single force of love and bestowal, relates to us according to how we relate to each other, and not solely in terms of how we relate to the system on its still, vegetative and animate levels. Therefore, however you might think about this system, whether as God, the Creator, the upper force or as nature, it has the same demands toward you, that you positively connect with other people. Based on the video Why is God Angry at Me? With Kabbalist Dr. Michael Laitman. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Laitman.